frog in the window will sing for you. The frog in the window will smile for you with his straw hat and his cane. And you know that you will not be the same, 'cause the frog in the window will dance for you. He'll tap out the rhythm in his bright red shoes. And if you ask why this is done, he'll say you're when you will not be.
You are listening to In the Window with DJ Frogs on Spirit Plants Radio, broadcasting round the world at spiritplantsradio.com. Turn on, tune in, and visit us on the web at spiritplantsradio.com for schedules, playlists, archives and more.
This is the story of the hare who lost his spectacles.
Owl loved to rest quietly whilst no one was watching. Sitting on a fence one day, he was surprised when suddenly a kangaroo ran close by. Now, this may not seem strange, but when Owl overheard kangaroo whisper to no one in particular, "The hare has lost his spectacles," well, he began to wonder. Presently, the moon appeared from behind a cloud, and there, lying on the grass, was hare. In the stream that flowed by the grass, a newt. And sitting astride a twig of a bush, a bee. Ostensibly motionless, the hare was trembling with excitement, for without his spectacles, he appeared completely helpless. Where were his spectacles? Could someone have stolen them? Had he mislaid them? What was he to do? Bee wanted to help, and thinking he had the answer, began, "You probably ate them, thinking they were a carrot." "No," interrupted Owl, who was wise. "I have good eyesight, insight, and foresight. How could an intelligent hare make such a silly mistake?" But all the time, Owl had been sitting on the fence, scowling. A kangaroo were oppy mad at this sort of talk. She thought herself a far superior in intelligence to the others, as she was their leader, their guru. She had the answer, "Hare, you must go in search of the optician." But then she realised that Hare were completely helpless without his spectacles, and so Kangaroo loudly proclaimed, "I can't send Hare in search of anything."
"You can, Guru, you can," shouted Newt. "You can send him with Owl."
But Owl had gone to sleep. A Newt too much to be stopped by so small a problem. "You can take him in your pouch." But alas, Hare was much too big to fit into Kangaroo's pouch. All this time, it had been quite plain to Hare that the others knew nothing about spectacles. And as for all their tempting ideas, well, Hare didn't care.
after all, I did have a spare, a pair.
That was Jethro Tull and the story of the hare who lost his spectacles from the album Passion Play. And now, Death in June and Red Odin Day from the Snow Bunker Tapes.
La 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 la. La 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 la. La 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 la.
My thorn apple, a devil's weed, an angel's trumpet, a fiend to feed. Return my fiery red and wintry grey. Hatred is my best friend on Red Odin's Day. Family history, mental butchery. The ability to see, a fait accompli. Return my fiery red and wintry grey. Hatred is my best friend on Red Odin's Day. The eternal sentry, sleepless in Salem, lost in heaven, faultless perception. Return my fiery red and wintry grey. Hatred is my best friend on Red Odin's Day. Return my fiery red and wintry grey.
Ba 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 ba. Ba 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 ba. La 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 la.
My thorn apple, a devil's weed, an angel's trumpet, a fiend to feed. Return my fiery red and wintry grey. Hatred is my best friend on Red Odin's Day. Return my fiery red and wintry grey. On Red Odin's Day, 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 wintry grey.
Next, A Wish Under My Pillow from Mischievous Moon by Jill Barber.
Put a wish under my pillow, and I hope it does come true. I put a wish under my pillow, and I dreamed all night of you. I put a wish into my heart, and I held it for safekeeping. Now suddenly it's creeping into my dreams. I dreamed we'd never be apart, and we'd always have this feeling, the feeling I've been longing for, to wish no more that you'd be mine.
put a wish into my heart, and I held it for safekeeping. But I think Cupid has been peeking and knew where to stop.
I put a wish under my pillow, and I hope it does come true. Put a wish under my pillow, and I dreamed all night of you.
Lonesome Wyatt and the Holy Spooks and the Mouldering One Returns from Ghost Ballads.
Scratching at the window, he knew that she'd be back. Though many years have passed now, she's finally home at last. And the grave may hold her bones, her skin be soft with mold, but the grave can hold her ghost. So dull and gray, these endless days of darkness must finally pass away. And the grave may hold her bones, her skin be soft with mold, the grave can hold her bones. But she fades away again. And the grave may hold her bones, her skin be soft with mold, but the grave can hold her ghost. This voodoo drum, the house it starts to creaking, but never does she come. And the grave may hold her bones, her skin be soft with mold, but the grave can hold her ghost.
The grave may hold her bones, her skin be soft with mold, but the grave can hold her ghost.
Serge Gainsbourg and No, No, Yes, Yes.
Yeah. now over to Uncle Buffo.
Here is our fourth Jess Williams story, and one of my favourites. It's read by Martin Jarvis and is William and the White Cat.
Mr. Romford's going to give me a Persian cat for a Christmas present, said Ethel to her mother. William stopped in the doorway, appalled. What about Jumble? He said indignantly. What about Jumble with an old cat about the place? You'd think that Jumble deserved a bit of peace.
You aren't the only person in the world who can keep animals, said Ethel.
Cats? Who'd call cats an animal? They aren't interesting, are they? They don't follow you like dogs, do they? They haven't interesting habits like insects. Oh, I must say they're very interesting.
William saw Ethel and his mother gathering breath to speak. His father had retired behind a paper. He hastily went out, shutting the door firmly behind him. William was walking slowly along the road, with his hands in his pockets, whistling. He felt at peace with all the world. He had a half crown in his pocket. It would soon be Christmas. He was thinking about all this when he observed a man coming along with a covered basket in his hands. It was Mr. Romford, Ethel's latest admirer. Mr. Romford stopped.
"Are you going home, William?"
he asked.
"Yes," said William, ungraciously.
"Would you mind taking this to your sister? It's a present I'm giving her for Christmas. Don't open the lid. It's a very valuable white cat."
William took it. Something was moving about inside.
"It's in a highly nervous state," went on the donor. No, I shouldn't look at it if I were you."
"All right," said William coldly. He walked on down the road. He swung the basket carelessly as he walked. An infuriated scratching and snarling came from inside. William swung it still more carelessly. "I'm not a cat carrier," he muttered indignantly. "Making me into a cat carrier for him." He sighted Ginger in the distance and hailed him with a piercing whistle. Ginger came up to him.
"What do you think's in here?" queried William.
"Dunno."
"An old cat. A man's given it to my sister. And how much do you think he's given me for it, for taking it?"
"Dunno."
"Nothing," said William bitterly. "Nothing. Making a cat carrier of me for nothing."
"Hey, listen at it," said Ginger, enraptured.
"It's been carrying on something dreadful ever since I got it," said William. "It's a beautiful, nice, quiet cat, isn't it? Oh, yes, it'll be nice for Jumble when this sort of wild thing gets loose, won't it? It'll be nice for him then."
Sarcasm was a new weapon of William's, and as yet his use of it was heavy.
"Let's have a look at it," said Ginger.
"All right, if you take any interest in it, I don't. I should think there's some law about giving wild animals for presents. There ought to be. Human life ought to be sacreder than what it seems to be to him. All right, look at it. Don't blame me if it leaves its mark on you for life."
Ginger cautiously opened the basket top a fraction of an inch. A small white paw shot out. Ginger closed it hastily and sucked his hand with an expression of agony on his face.
"Golly!"
he exclaimed.
"There," said William triumphantly. "Didn't I tell you? It'll probably give you blood poisoning. All I hope is, if you die of it, he'll get hung. He ought to be, sending wild cats without taming them first."
Ginger assumed a heroic expression.
"He wasn't much of a scratch. Let's have another look."
He opened the lid of the basket again. Both William and Ginger disclaimed responsibility for what followed. A white ball of fury hurled itself out of the basket, dealt William a long scratch across his cheek, nearly tore off Ginger's ear, and disappeared over the nearest wall.
"Well," said William coldly, "what you going to do now?"
"Me?" said Ginger.
"Yes, just tell me how you're going to replace a valuable cat what you've just let loose. Just tell me what I'm going to do. Am I going home to say I've got a valuable cat in a highly nervous state, and then them find there's nothing in the basket but just air? This is all I get for being his cat carrier. Well, you let it loose, and you've got to replace it. I mean, that's sense, isn't it? I was just quietly carrying a valuable cat in a highly nervous state down the road, and you come along and let it loose. Well, what you going to do?"
"Well, what can I do?" said Ginger helplessly. "I didn't know the thing was a cat lunatic, did I? It ought to be in a cat asylum. You never told me you was carrying a wild cat or a mad cat. You just said a cat. You...
But the white ball of fury had appeared again, flying over the wall and down the road at full speed. William grasped the empty basket and started after it. "Come on!" he shouted. "Come on, catch it! Catch it!" They raced down the road after the flying white ball, through a garden, in and out of a house, along a wall, the cat on top, and William and Ginger at the foot. They nearly got her then. She fell into a rain tub, but scrambled out and fled again, dripping and grimy, through a muddy ditch. The ball of fury was now not white, but a dingy grey, and suddenly right into a tabby cat with a broken ear, who was washing its face by the roadside. There was a whirl of claws and flying fur. "Get it now!" yelled William. "Get it while they're fighting!" Ginger seized the basket and effected the capture neatly, but not without a dozen or so more scratches. They fastened up the basket. "Well, you can't say I didn't do that pretty neatly, can you?" said Ginger. "Oh, come on," said William. "Let's get it home." They walked along in silence for a bit.
"Seems a bit quieter, doesn't it?" said Ginger.
"Speckit knows now it's no use of making a fuss. Speckit didn't quite know before what sort of cat-catchers we was."
"I say, let's have another look at it, William."
"Oh, yes, and go letting it loose all over the place again. Oh, yes, do.
It's quiet now. It'll not mind me looking. I want to see if it's got very dirty."
William weakened.
"I'll have a look at it this time. Then perhaps it won't get loose all over the place."
Cautiously, he opened the basket lid. Over his face came a look of horror. He opened the basket wider. A friendly tabby with a broken ear regarded them and gave a tentative purr.
Oh, yes, you caught it all right, but you caught the wrong one."
Ginger looked at it aghast. Then he pulled himself together.
"Well, we'll have to pretend that it's the one."
"Oh, yes," said William. "She'll believe it's a valuable white cat in a highly nervous state, won't she? Oh, yes, she's quite likely to believe that."
They sat down by the roadside and stared at each other hopelessly. The tabby showed no signs of wishing to leave them, though in their despair they'd left the basket open.
"We might do something to make it nervous," suggested Ginger feebly.
"Oh, yes, and then do something to make it valuable, and then do something to make it white."
They were both strangely silent at this last suggestion. The hopelessness of their countenances seemed to clear. 10 minutes later, they'd retired to a deserted field to perform a delicate task with items borrowed from the yard behind the village shop. William took the paintbrush in one hand and put down the paint pot on the grass by his feet. Then he took out the cat.
"Now, I'm going to do this," he explained, "because I want it done properly. I don't want this cat let loose all over the place."
He held the cat in one hand and drew a bold line of white paint down its back. The next moment he was sucking a deep red scratch on both hands, and a white-flecked tabby cat was disappearing in the distance.
"You did that all right, didn't you?" said Ginger, not without satisfaction. "Come on, let's leave it and go home," he went on.
"Oh, yes," burst out William. "It's all right for you. You've not to go home and say you've lost a valuable white cat in a highly nervous state, what someone was given to Ethel."
"Well, what can I do?" snapped Ginger.
"You can produce some sort of cat," said William firmly. "That's all I say. You let the first one loose all over the place, and you can produce another. That's all I say. I'm not going home without some sort of cat."
"Well, there ought to be lots of cats about," said Ginger.
They went down the village street. Only one cat was to be seen. William and Ginger approached it cautiously.
"Pretty pussy," said William.
"Puss, puss, puss," said Ginger in honeyed accents.
"Pretty pussy, pretty pussy, and I feel more like murdering it," said William.
The cat sidled up to them. William picked it up, stroking it affectionately with an expression of intense hatred on his face.
"Open the basket, Ginger, quickly."
"Mother!" came a shrill voice in his rear. "Boys is stealing our cat!"
William dropped the cat and fled down the road, followed by a broomstick flung after him by the cat's owner and a stone thrown by the child. Finally, they found one more cat. It responded to William's oily flattering. It deigned to be taken up in his arms and stroked. It was not till it was almost lowered into the basket that it showed the falseness of its friendliness. Its wildness then surpassed even the wildness of the first occupant of the fateful basket. "Well, I've done with cats," said William, solemnly withdrawing his hand from his mouth and watching the furry flying creature in the distance. "If they was to come in crowds now asking to be put in the basket, I wouldn't touch them. I've done with cats. I'll feel sick whenever I see a cat for the rest of my life." A boy came down the road, his pockets bulging with something that moved. "What's that?" said William. The boy took out a small furry animal.
"Ferret. Me dad catches rabbits with them. You got to be careful how you hold some."
"Will you sell it?" asked William, taking out his half-crown. "It's not a cat," said Ginger wearily. But William had not lost his optimism. "Some folks don't know much about animals. They might think it was a cat." William's father and mother and sister were in the morning room when he entered with his basket. He held it out to Ethel. "There's your cat," he said.
"From Mr. Romford?"
"Yes," said William gloomily. She opened the lid a fraction, then shut it in silence. She looked mystified.
"It isn't a cat."
William's face was expressionless.
"All I can say is what he told me," he said in a monotonous voice. "He said it was a valuable white cat in a highly nervous state."
"This?"
"It may have got a bit mixed up on the way, but that's what he said. He said it was a valuable white cat in a highly nervous state."
"You needn't keep on saying that," said Ethel irritably.
"It's what he said," said William. "He said distinctly that it was a valuable white cat in a..."
"Be quiet, William."
William's father came across the room and held the lid open, peering in. Suddenly he withdrew his finger with a yell of pain and rushed from the room, uttering muffled curses.
"Do you mean to say, William," said Mrs. Brown, "that Mr. Romford sent Ethel that, whatever it is?"
"All I can say is what he told me. He said it was a valuable..."
"Mother, if William says that once more, I shall go mad."
William came across to it, curiously.
"Let's have a look at it," he said.
"Oh, ow! Ow! It bit me!"
It was out of the basket suddenly and across the room. Ethel gave a piercing scream. It met Jumble in the hall, and a mad chase ensued, scampering down the hall, round the drawing room, the crashing of a small table and all its ornaments, the ferocious growling of Jumble, then silence.
"I can't stand much more of this," said Mrs. Brown. "I don't know what the animal is, but how any man could send it for a Christmas present, too, I..."
Then William saw a man coming up the drive carrying the dirty, bedraggled white cat.
Look, he said. "That's him."
"It's Mr. Romford," said Ethel.
She went out into the hall. The conversation was distinctly audible.
How do you do, Miss Brown? I'm afraid there's been some little accident. I've..."
"Thank you very much," said Ethel coldly. "But we don't want any more cats here.
I'm afraid there's been..."
"The kindest thing to think, Mr. Romford," said Ethel, "is that you hadn't the least idea what you were doing.
Well, there's been..."
"My father and my poor little brother have been very badly injured. These things often prove fatal.
There's been..."
"My mother is terribly upset by it."
I can explain, Miss Brown."
"I dare say you can. You must excuse me. Goodbye."
She shut the door and returned to the morning room.
"Go and wash your hands, William," said Mrs. Brown.
William was watching Mr. Romford's crestfallen departure. His indignation returned.
"Making me his cat carrier," he muttered.
"William, will you go? And how much do you think he gave me for bringing it?" "I've no idea. And if once the dirt gets right into a bite like that..."
"Nothing,"
said William dramatically, as he turned to the door. He stopped and turned back.
"As a matter of fact, I'm in a highly nervous state."
You're listening to DJ Frog's In the Window and Uncle Buffo's Comedy Spot on Spirit Plants Radio, broadcasting round the world at spiritplantsradio.com. Turn on, tune in, and visit us on the web at spiritplantsradio.com for schedules, playlists, archives and more.
Here's Can and In the Distance Lies the Future from the 1989 album Right Time.
In the distance lies the future. 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 Cracked and all that typical hell, but you'll never, never care. Back and all that's in the air. So my friend, beware. In the distance lies the future. In the distance lies the future. In the distance lies the future.
Lisa Germano with Dance of the Bees from her new album, No Elephants.
Thank you.
And now to follow Dance of the Bees, U.R. Wolfe, a.k.a. Kerry Andrew, was commissioned to write a song inspired by bees by the BBC for the Radio 3 programme The Verb. Honey Bee features Lucy Mulligan on double bass and tissue paper.
A swarm of bees in May is worth a whip of hay. A swarm of bees in June is worth a silver spoon. A swarm of bees in July let them fly. Stagger and weave through the soft rotting leaf and into my baby's cradle. Lullaby bee and land on his lips, land there, and he'll be a poet. Honey bee, come to me, come bumble and land in the well of my hand. I flowers here, shallock and clover. Oh, fairy bee, come land on my hand. Land there, and I'll be a rich girl. Honey bee, come to me, I need you to go. Where the ghost poppies grow, to tell my beloved I miss him, she misses you, she misses you, she misses you.
I have to apologise for the next track, but sorry, I just couldn't resist it.
Oh, what a glorious thing to be, a healthy grown-up, busy, busy bee, whiling away the passing hours, pinching all the pollen from the cauliflowers. I'd like to be a busy, busy bee, being just as busy as a bee can be, flying round the garden, the sweetest ever seen, taking back the honey to the dear old queen. Buzz, 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 honey bee, buzz if you like, but don't sting me. Buzz, 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 honey bee, buzz if you like, but don't sting me. Buzz. Oh, what a glorious thing to be, a healthy grown-up, busy, busy bee, making hay while time is ripe, building up the honeycomb just like tripe. I'd like to be a busy, busy bee, being just as busy as a bee can be, flying all around the wild hedgerows, stinging all the cows upon the parson's nose. Bzz, 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 honey bee, bzz, if you like, but don't sting me. Bzz, 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 honey bee, bzz, if you like, but don't sting me. Bzz, 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 bzz. Oh, what a glorious thing to be a healthy grown-up busy, busy bee. Visiting the picnics, quite a little tease, raising little lumps upon the Boy Scouts' knees. I'd like to be a busy, busy bee, being just as busy as a bee can be, flirting with the butterfly strung upon the wing. Whoopee, oh, death, where is thy sting? Buzz, 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 honeybee, honeybee, buzz, if you like, buzz, sing me. Buzz, 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 honey, honeybee, buzz, if you like, buzz. Silly bee song, isn't it? Oh, what a glorious thing to be a nice, obedient, busy, busy bee. To be a good bee, one must contrive, for bees in a beehive must be hive. But maybe I wouldn't be a bee. Bees are all right when alive, you see. When bees die, you really should see them pinned on a card in a mucky museum. Bzz, 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 honeybee, honeybee, bzz, if you like, but don't sting me. Bzz, 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 honeybee, honeybee, I must buzz off. Bzz, if you like, but don't sting me.
That was Arthur Askey and the Bee Song. And this is Julia Stone, Lights Inside This Dream, from her new album, The Memory Machine.
Inside this dream, someone came here and turned them out on me. Now it's dark and I can't see. There's always someone with something they need. Take what they take.
Martin Green and Shima, somebody with an unpronounceable surname, and Sitar Waltz. Is the Pixies and Is She Wired from the 1990 album Bossa Nova.
Thank you.
From Harry Manx's current album, Om Sweet Om, here is Love Supreme. And that's it for this show. If you have been, thanks for listening.